Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister for yet another spoiler-filled discussion on Doctor Who. We're going to go over the specials from 2013. There were two of them. And we're going to do this in two parts. Discuss one special, then go watch the other one, talk about it.
And I'm liking that we're watching things, or at least I'm getting to watch things, only up to the point that we're discussing, so I don't have to not remember certain things for the discussion, if that makes sense.
Yes, it's hard. Well, and that's one of the challenges I've had on some of these past ones is, for the most part, I'm going off memory, and it's like, okay, where were you at with this character by the end of this series or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And a few times I may have gotten it a little off. This one, I've got a very clear memory of having watched. What we're going to talk about right now is really two things. It's the main thing is The Day of the Doctor. This is the 50th anniversary special they did. This was simulcast around the world. I originally saw it at the Austin Wizard World in 2013.
And that's what I remember, was that it timed to a bunch of conventions, and the Austin Wizard World happened to be one of them.
Well, but it was something you could watch on TV, in a theater. I mean,
yeah,
it was a big, big deal.
Yeah.
Because keep in mind, at this point, no Star Trek on TV, no Farscape, no Stargate. I mean, there was Doctor Who was the big sci-fi franchise worldwide.
Well, I remember the Austin Wizard World having a panel room for it, and we discussed, as you were getting ready to go, you know, how big a priority is it, since it was also airing on mm-hmm. BBC America, you could record it. So how big a priority is it to go see it in the panel? And not watching Who at the time, I encouraged you to go because it's one of those theater experiences where you were going to be in a room of over 100 people who are immersed in a love of that fandom.
Well, and what they had done at this particular convention was the hour before it, they had a bunch of people talking about Doctor Who, what it meant to them, you know, how they got involved with the show, at what point, and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of places did that sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I think there was even a, the Nerdist might have done one of their talking whatever things shows kind of before it aired. Did that for the BBC, I think. It was a big, big deal.
Yeah.
The other thing that we're going to talk about here is The Night of the Doctor. This is about a 7-minute featurette that was released on the web before this was released. And it just kind of like popped up out of nowhere of, hey, here's this to go watch.
Yeah.
And this featurette is part of why I suggested starting with the Eighth Doctor, Paul McGann.
Mm-hmm.
Because this storyline concludes his arc. Because when the new show started, we get Eccleston. He's clearly just regenerated. And there's talk about the Time War and all of this stuff. But it wasn't the Eccleston Doctor who had been in the Time War.
Yeah.
And what this tells us is it wasn't the Paul McGann Doctor either.
Yeah.
He dies and through the Sisters of Karn is able to kind of customize his next regeneration a little.
Well, yeah, he's given basically, I want to say, a choice in terms of he can choose a quality. He can choose, do you want to be young? Do you want to be old? Do you want to be a warrior? Is the choice he makes. But so it's not like he can custom pick.
It was a little unclear to me. They were offering, do you want young, do you want old, do you want wise, do you want this?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't take it personally as an either or, pick one of any of these things.
To me, it was a you get to pick the most important quality, not a you get to custom pick everything.
Obviously, it's not a fine-tuned sort of a system. I guess in my imagination, I was equating it to there were various vials that you could mix together and get a young, wise, you know, soldier or an old, you know, happy-go-lucky, you know, whatever the criteria were.
Yeah. But I guess my point was, because they had pre-mixed things, mm-hmm. it was, this is one where wise is the emphasis, and you get what else we chose to go with it.
Right. Well, because they're not going to do a custom brew in the 4 minutes they had.
Yeah.
Now, the Sisters of Karn, I believe, were from the Eighth Doctor's audio dramas.
Ah, interesting.
And when he's reciting a bunch of names, those are his companions
yeah.
from those. And this is the first time that the Eighth Doctor was really ever in a BBC production, live action.
I really liked that Cass refused to go with him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a very powerful, she would rather die than go with the Time Lord. Because it really established how the Time Lords are viewed, how a TARDIS is viewed.
Well, at that point in time, the Time War is going hot and heavy, and you've got two, as far as everyone else is concerned, warrior races going at it.
Yeah.
And even if the Doctor doesn't see himself that way, that's how the Doctor, the Time Lords were perceived.
Well, and it also tells you that the Doctor is not known on a galactic level as an individual. Because he can't care to understand, I'm not one of them. I'm a good guy. I'm separate from, I don't fight in the Time War.
I think when you've got the Time Lords in such a huge battle, thinking that this is the one that's different.
Yeah.
Nah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But what was fun with this short special is it pulled in the Paul McGann Doctor officially into continuity.
Mm-hmm.
It pulled the audio dramas quasi-officially into continuity.
Mm-hmm.
It really set up the John Hurt War Doctor.
Yes.
That we had seen at the end of the last season. And really kind of, you know, teased, we're going to get the big Time War stuff, you know, in the 50th anniversary special.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a lot of fun. It also kind of, again, brings full circle. I mean, just between the Eighth Doctor TV movie, this, and the Day of the Doctor, you get two full incarnations of the Doctor.
Yes.
So very, very efficient time-wise. And that brings us to the Day of the Doctor, which is a... we watched the 2D version on Blu-ray. I've got the 3D, but we were eating, and so, yeah. Sometimes the 3D doesn't always work, but it's very... It very much had a good 3D aspect to it, even just on the 2D version.
Yeah.
They did just an outstanding job on this. And I recall when I saw it at the convention center here in town that there was a vibrance to it, a high-quality resolution fidelity to it that was just breathtaking.
There's a 3D time-locked painting that is just remarkable.
And as they're kind of pivoting around it, it's almost like a lenticular cover yeah. kind of a thing, but done flawlessly. It was just amazing. The other thing, from a writing point of view, where I think Stephen Moffat really just outdid himself, I would say this is probably the best episode he's written.
Yeah.
Because we follow the storyline from the War Doctor perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get, or actually no, we start with the 11th Doctor, and I just watched it too, it's sad. Yeah.
No, we pretty much start with the War Doctor because he is in the battles. And he's choosing the moment.
That's right. He gets to the moment. Then we fade into kind of the 11th Doctor's storyline. The 11th Doctor gets pulled into the stuff. Then we get into the 10th Doctor's part of the storyline. And everything, I mean, the timeline of the three Doctors is kind of intertwining. And where the story kind of hands off almost from one to another.
Yeah.
And then you've got them all together, and then, you know, it was, you could have told this same story in a number of different orders, and it would have worked.
I think the story had the best use of the Fez.
Yes. It had a great use of the Fez. It had a lot of in-jokes and Easter eggs, because a couple of the lines of, you know, there's a precedent for this with three Doctors. She was referring to the three Doctors, which was a previous adventure with three earlier Doctors. There were a number of lines of dialogue of, oh, you've redecorated, I don't like it, from previous crossovers, from, you know, attributes of the different Doctors over time. You know, the reference to sand shoes and grandpa. again, echoed stuff from the Three Doctors and other kind of high points of the 50 years of the show.
Very nice.
So I thought they told an excellent story that had, you got to pay attention to stick with it and stuff, but it was not hard to follow either.
Yeah.
There are a couple of things that they just kind of drop out there and almost let go. You know, when the tenant doctor hears the reference to Bad Wolf, but the story, it's like, well, we got to keep going. We can't really dwell on that.
He catches it. He knows something's going on.
Kind of a, did you say Bad Wolf? But it's like, okay, we got to keep moving.
Yeah.
There was just some brilliant writing. And then there at the end, the scene with the curator.
Mm.
That actor, one of the previous doctors.
That's why I figured.
Don't quiz me as to which one. I'd have to go look. But I love the shot there at the end when the doctor's like, you know, Clara asks if I dream and what do I dream about? And we get this shot of the 12 doctors.
Yeah, that was very nicely done.
It was just incredible. And it really, this did such a great job of celebrating the history of the character without it being kind of a clip show of all 12 doctors or something.
Well, we know from a past episode or two-parter, at least the one with Timothy Dalton, I guess, that the High Council and the whole war and Gallifrey, that they're time locked.
Mm-hmm.
So I was waiting for Gallifrey shouldn't burn. It should get time locked. And this should tell us how that happened. That should be kind of the crux of the episode. But watching the doctor go through the thought process as he's there with this weapon of the only way I can see to end the war,
mm-hmm,
is to destroy all the warriors on both sides. And I recognize there will be innocent casualties. I hate that. It destroys me inside. But I see no other option. And I love that there's this weapon with an artificial intelligence that is so intelligent, it's developed a conscience.
Well, that it doesn't want to be used.
Yes.
It certainly will not accept being abused.
Yes.
And having Billy Piper play the role of the moment, that weapon, I thought was great because it was a way for her to come back to the show without really bringing Rose Tyler back, per se.
Yeah.
And it gave her just a little bit more maneuvering room as to what she could do.
Yes.
She wasn't tied down to the character from years prior. It would have been nice to have had a few other kind of callbacks and whatnot. You know, having Captain Jack's time vortex manipulator was cool.
Yeah.
Not having Captain Jack, okay, that's a shame. But there was so much going on that you really didn't have room for a lot of other stuff.
Yeah. I loved when the Matt Smith doctor is, you know, one of the three doctors and they're being told, so take them to the tower. And at first they're protesting. He's like, no, no, lock us up in the tower. I'm good with this.
Yes, this works for me. And Kate Stewart, head of unit, it's like, oh, that clever man, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And it was hilarious when they're locked in the tower and then Clara just comes barging in as they're about to escape.
Yes.
And they're like, how did you do that? It wasn't locked. You didn't check? The way she dresses down the doctors of just how preoccupied were you guys,
yes,
to not check for the obvious stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
That's part of why I think she's just such a great companion. She's not rude. She's not condescending. She's not scolding them. She's just got an honest disbelief of, how could you have missed this?
Well, she is also very observant and very maternal in that she knows that the physically oldest looking doctor is the youngest doctor because his eyes are not weighed by the regret that she sees in the other doctors.
She was the one to realize he hadn't pushed the button yet.
Yeah.
And there's a scene or two that's implied but never shown where he's gone, she tells the other doctors, hey, this is what's going on. They get to their TARDISes, and then they go visit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's, I don't say story that's missing, but implied.
Yeah. Well, and it does carry back to that episode at the amusement park, where the Emperor said, the person I feel sorry for is the one who pressed the button.
Mm-hmm. that was something that by that point, I think they knew what this basic story was going to be and allowed them to kind of foreshadow some stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there was just some great moments with Tennant and Smith.
Yes.
And showing how alike their doctors are, yet they're different.
Yes.
You know, again, Smith has a bit of a swagger to it that the Tennant doctor doesn't. But there are other scenes, particularly when they're in the Black Archive or whatever, where the two are doing almost in unison mirror image of each other.
Yes.
You know, and neither one is out of character.
Yeah.
Neither one is kind of doing the other character. But it is showing how, and I don't want to say that Smith lifted aspects from Tennant, but there are certain aspects with those two regenerations that are
simply consistency of character.
Consistency, contiguous, yeah.
Yeah.
The glasses, some of the use of the screwdriver.
One of the things I loved in the cell in the Tower of London was when the John Hurt doctor was asking them, did you ever count how many children were on Gallifrey when you pressed the button? And the Tennant doctor is the one who answers with the number. And the Matt Smith doctor says, no, of course I never counted. And the Tennant one challenges him, have you forgotten? Could you forget? And they kind of go back and forth on the, I had to move beyond that.
Well, because Tennant is upset with Smith for having forgotten.
Yes.
And
yeah.
What was unclear to me is which doctor did the counting? Was it Tennant or was it Eccleston? And they never make it clear.
Yeah.
I mean, Tennant knew exactly. He could have gone down to the individual number of kids if pressed.
Yeah.
You know.
But part of it was he was that much closer to the pain and the incident.
Well, and again, Smith is 400 years down the line.
Yeah.
And that whole exchange gets out that 400-year marker that sets up the, we could use the screwdrivers to do this to get out.
Yeah.
Which sets up the calculations it would take to time lock the planet.
Yeah.
So there's a certain amount of, we need to get to this point, so this had to happen before it, this had to happen to make that happen. And it was a well-constructed story.
Yeah, it was.
And it was also just fun as to how different the Tennant and Smith doctors are from the War Doctor.
Yes.
Who is just, I don't say a grumpy old man, but a little more, certainly way more of that than either of the other two.
Well, he is so determined to see no more fighting that even if the destruction of everyone and everything is the only way to end it. And I thought it was interesting when he used the gun to write out the no more, because I saw a no more coming. And then I'm like, wait, I can't read what it says. Did he really write the no more I was expecting? But I thought it was funny that the Time Lords only interpreted the no more message as being written for the Daleks. Because to me, it was an ultimatum to both sides.
Yeah, but I think the Time Lords thought either he was on their side or they're just so arrogant as to not even to occur that it could have applied to them.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say the War Doctor was at a point of exasperation.
Yes.
It's this war has gone on too long. There have been too many deaths. This whole thing just cannot be allowed to continue.
Well, I liked the Matt Smith take on it because of everything we've seen in all these series of if I can time lock the planet, there's hope.
Mm-hmm.
Because they aren't dead. I haven't burned it. I haven't destroyed it.
But I liked also the uncertainty.
Yes.
We tried. Did it work? Don't know.
Yeah.
And then a bit with the curator who's implying, almost flat out telling the doctor it did work, and that potentially that curator is the doctor from the future.
Yeah.
Where he has retired, gone back to a comfortable face, with the implication that at this point the doctor is just peacefully living on Earth, not really having adventures, but when he's been around too long and it's like, well, okay, I can't stay here forever with this face. He'll just flip to another face, reestablish himself, and continue on for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so whether he even has the TARDIS with him at that point is unclear.
I liked when they lined up the three TARDIS side by side.
Mm.
And they had the slightly different paint colors and the slightly different scuff marks and stuff. the wear and tear of different owners.
Well, and also when the three doctors were in the TARDIS and the desktop theme was kind of bouncing around.
Yes, yes.
And when they get to the circles, it's like, ooh, love the circles. What are the circles? Don't know, but I love them.
Yes.
Then when we're at the museum.
The circles were on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that too.
Again, it's an episode that rewards the attentive viewer.
Yes.
Yet it also entertains the casual viewer, I think.
Yeah.
Again, great use of Clara, the interaction with all the doctors. It's a shame that the Billy Piper character of the moment was really only interacting with the War Doctor. But kind of made sense. You just didn't have time for her to interact with the others.
Yeah.
So overall, I thought it was just a ton of fun, well worth checking out.
Definitely.
Seeing it live was in a crowd was a lot of fun, too. Just, again, you get the reactions, and there's a lot of moments where things are kicking into high gear. It's like, okay, we get the moments with the two doctors, people laugh. You get the moment at the end where they kind of pull everything together to save Gallifrey. You know, it was the right special at the right time with the right moment for the franchise.
Well, and I would imagine the crowd reacted well to the fact that it was the John Hurt doctor that was teasing and mocking the other two doctors for using their screwdriver as if it were a weapon, the way they pointed it and stuff.
Well, not only that, when you've got the doctors and the TARDISes trying to save Gallifrey, you get Matt Smith doing Geronimo, you get David Tennant doing Alan Z.
Yeah.
And you get the War Doctor doing, you know, for Pete's sake kind of a thing. It's like, come on, boys, grow up.
Yes.
And him being younger than them, you know.
Yeah.
There was an aspect of that where I would have liked to have seen a little bit more footage of the other doctors.
They did a great job with the footage they were able to pull in of the other doctors, setting coordinates and that kind of stuff. They were able to pull nice audio clips that made sense and put them up on those screens.
I would have to imagine at some point in the not too distant future, absolutely certainly by the 75th anniversary of the property, that they would be able to use a combination of motion capture, 3D modeling, voiceover type work to completely recreate all of the other doctors, the mannerisms, etc.
The latest announcement for the next Star Trek show, Discovery, is that the computer voice will be Majel Barrett. She died how many years ago?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's how far technology is already coming.
But imagine if you could virtually resurrect all of these other doctors and do an actual, all of them are running around having adventures with their companions that are all crisscrossing to this one event or something.
Yeah.
We're not far from it. So I thought this was really good. I loved how it teased the next doctors. You got all 13 incarnations.
Yeah.
And that was just, again, the Time Lords of Gallifrey reaction of just three of them wasn't enough. We got all 12. Oh, wait, all 13?
Yeah.
Kind of, oh, no.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. At this point, we've got the next special, which ends Smith's run.
Okay.
So go on with that. Watch that now.
Yes, please.
Cool. Just finished watching The Time of the Doc, which is the end of the Matt Smith regeneration of the Doc. It's a Christmas special that was after, again, the 50th anniversary, the Time of the Doctor. No, the Day of the Doctor, because it's Name of the Doctor, Night of the Doctor, Day of the Doctor, Time of the Doctor. I always get this wrong. Too many of the Doctor titles.
What?
Back to back to back to back to back.
And time named. Night, day, time.
Yes. This was Matt Smith's swan song, and he gave just an outstanding performance.
Yeah, the series had gone through so much of Amy Pond's lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And we see so much of Matt Smith's doctor's lifespan in this one special. As much as we were skipping over chunks of it through the series.
Because we get another 300 years here?
At least.
So this incarnation of the doctor lived through at least 700 years?
Well, it's 400 years from the time of the War Doctor
to when he's
in the Tower of London with him. So that counts in the David Tennant years, which weren't that many. I mean, it's implied that there were some off-screen adventures.
But there's a 200-year jump at one point with the Matt Smith Doctor.
Correct.
During the Impossible Astronaut
yeah.
season and stuff. So that's at least 500 years for this Doctor.
Well, I never was sure, though, if that was a lie or a truth.
The Doctor lies, so assuming it is the truth, since we've got nothing else to go by.
Yeah.
This incarnation is not only the longest last, but presumably a third of the overall Doctor's life.
Yeah.
Of course, he probably is lying, so none of that matters.
Well, but just watching him age on screen was remarkable.
The effects, the prosthetics and stuff, the aging effects, really well done. The way he acted as he aged.
He had I want to say a Santa Claus type personality and role within the town of Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one the kids brought their broken toys to, and he fixed them. And the toy train, he happened to add a little anti-grav feature to. He had fixed something for one of the kid's parents, and the kid whispered...
The barn.
The barn, that's what it was. And the kid whispered, and Dad says it's now bigger on the inside.
Mm-hmm. What I found interesting is when we get near the point, or we get to the point where the Doctor is the oldest he gets, you know, it's been the hundreds and hundreds of years, there's an aspect of that that reminded me of the Seventh Doctor at the beginning of the Fox TV movie.
Mm-hmm.
Where, again, it's not as old, but the mannerisms, the dress style,
yeah.
the glasses, those sorts of things. You know, there's a certain aspect of the Doctor will kind of circle back to personality traits and mannerisms, you know, over his lifetimes.
Well, we had been told throughout the series that the big question would be Doctor Who, playing mm-hmm. off of the title. And it was, in this movie, very much a, if he says his name, if he answers the question, Doctor Who, big pivotal things will happen, war will break out, it'll be world-ending, basically. And I loved it when Clara leans into the crack in the wall and whispers through it, you've been asking the wrong question.
It's not who was he, it's kind of who is he.
Yeah.
He is the Doctor, that's all you need. And that's what winds up with the Time Lords of Gallifrey, which is presumably what's on the other side of that crack, gifting him another regeneration cycle.
Yeah.
Because at this point, while he is the 11th Doctor, there's the War Doctor, so that gets us to 12 out of 13 lives, and he reminds us that Tennant basically used up one of the regenerations at one point, which is when he spun off kind of the arm into its own body.
Yeah.
So this was his last incarnation.
Yeah.
But now he's got another cycle, which he's just used one of. So presumably another 11 regenerations to go. At which point I'm sure the writer at that point will say, you know, let's get him another cycle.
Yeah.
You know, because he saved Gallifrey so many times because of this, because of that, you know, some other cheat. And there was an aspect of Moffat sort of speaking through the character of don't tell me the rules.
Yes.
You know, yeah. I make them up and I break them as I go kind of mentality.
Well, but I also liked his saying that, you know, we're a different person at different points in our lives.
Well, we've gotten kind of the swan song speech of that final moment for a number of doctors now. We've gotten the War Doctor, we've got the Paul McGann Doctor, we've gotten Eccleston, we've gotten Tennant, now Smith.
Yeah.
So that's a total of five.
Yeah.
And for me, I really think Tennant's was kind of the most moving and the best.
Definitely. It was the most impassioned, I'm not ready to go, I have more to do. It was the most relatable in a lot of ways. But what I liked about this one is if you put me in a situation today,
mm-hmm.
how I dealt with it would be different than if you had put 30-year-old me in that situation.
Well, and I like how this doctor was basically pointing out everybody is different people at different points in their lives.
Yeah.
And as long as you don't forget who you have been, it's all good.
Yeah.
What I didn't like about the speech right before his regeneration there was there were aspects where it felt very much like it was Matt Smith talking, not the doctor. I'll remember when the doctor was me, I won't forget a moment of this. And I appreciate them giving the actor that moment.
Yeah.
But what I liked about Tennant's is there was an aspect of the I don't want to go part, but it felt like the doctor was saying it, not the actor was saying it.
Well, But I think that the Doctor realizes there won't be another regeneration in which he lives 500 or 600 years.
I don't know about that, because, again, with the whole curator of the museum and stuff, I think he's envisioning he could actually retire at some point.
He could retire, but will he simply live out to old age? Will he find one place to settle for hundreds of years and be the protector of a town?
I don't think he'll have that. But I also, at that point, he realizes this is a midlife crisis, not an end-of-life crisis.
True.
So it's a definite turning point, and you can see his energy coming back with the, you know, this isn't over, I'm not winding down. I'm getting my second wind, we're going to go for a long time now. And it was fun, and again, he did a terrific job.
Mm.
There were a few other things in this episode that were very Moffat-esque in terms of let's do something wacky for the sake of doing something wacky. The invisible, the nude wearing clothes that are holographically projected into one person's eyes.
Yeah.
The truth field, which he played a little fast and loose with.
Well, the truth field, in terms of the Cyberman that was made of wood, he told the truth. He didn't mention that the sonic screwdriver doesn't work on wood, but the audience knows that, because how many times has he complained about it?
I was thinking more in terms of when he was sending Clara away and stuff like that. I guess you can speak the truth and still be misleading.
Yes.
The Doctor is an expert at that.
You can speak the truth and leave out details.
The truth field seemed to come up to the point of, oh, I will have to give my name and not lie. And then after that, it was just kind of forgotten about. I thought the use of the silence was a lot of fun.
I was surprised the silence came back.
I was too when I first saw it, but I liked how Clara had never seen them.
Mm-hmm.
But because she's frankly, not a bit smarter than the other companions, but picks up on things a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Wait, when I see you, I can remember you. When I can't see you, I don't. How does that work?
Yeah.
And just she clicks onto these things. She pays attention.
She does.
Her hanging onto the outside of the TARDIS as it was coming back.
Yeah.
That was fun. Reminiscent again of Captain Jack.
Yeah.
So again, Clara's one of probably my favorite companions so far. She's smart. She's witty. She's
right up there with the Pons for me.
I like her better than the Pons because I think she brings a lot to the table. Not that the Pons don't. They're very close second.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly in terms of character arc and things like that. They had just a wonderful run. And I've also seen more of Clara than you have.
I was going to say, for me, Clara's life, her real life is too inconsistent. She was nannying the kids. Now she's teaching school.
Because the teaching started in the last special we just watched.
Yeah.
Things I didn't mention at that point. When we first see the school, there's a sign towards a junkyard.
Mm-hmm.
That was an Easter egg because that's where the TARDIS was back in the very first episode.
Ah, okay.
Ian Chesterfield, I. Chesterfield, who is the headmaster at this school,
mm-hmm.
was one of the companions.
Ah.
He was a teacher.
Okay.
So there were certain things that almost imply the Doctor may have set her up with this job.
Interesting.
Whether she knows that or not.
Well, see, I was thinking if the kids she'd been nannying were students there, or if they had at least remarked that those kids were off at college, I'd have a better idea time frame wise for her where we are.
Why was she no longer the nanny versus why does she have the new job? And that's fair. They've only had so many episodes to kind of give the backstory for the character and her present day status quo. She's got an energy to her, and
I love her loyalty.
Yeah.
No matter how many times the Doctor tries to shield her, protect her, send her to safety, she keeps coming back.
Well, a loyalty and an empathy.
Yes.
She's very much a feeling person.
Yeah.
You know, the number of times she's tearing up about things.
Yeah. And understandably tearing up. I weep at anything.
Yes. It's not that she cries easily. It's that she's going through some emotional things with the Doctor.
Yeah.
Again, being kind of betrayed and sent away a couple of times by him.
Yeah. Well, in the previous one, when all three Doctors now have their hands on the button, and she's crying, And the Matt Smith doctor is saying, whatever it is, say it. Mm-hmm. She says, well, you always told me you did this, but, and she's kind of looking at the other two, like the, I thought it was one of those faces, one of those hands. I knew
a version of you did it, but not this version of you.
Yeah.
The one she knew would not push the button.
Yeah.
And again, that goes back to the role of the companion, to question, to prod, to poke. To I don't say keep the doctor in check.
Well, and pointing out to him, you've had 400 years. I know you. You have to have thought there was another way if only I'd had more time in the moment. And here you are in the moment with 400 years.
You can do it over again now. Surely you've got a better idea.
Yeah.
I would have, in that, liked to have seen Tennant kind of, well, I thought about this, that, and the other, but it wouldn't have worked. And then Smith said, yeah, but I've had a little longer.
Yeah.
Having this entire special take place in the town of Christmas on the planet of Trenzalore, it took a while for the whole Trenzalore thing to come out.
Yeah.
That was fun, was good, but again, they keep teasing certain things of this is the end of it for the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, by this point, it was really well known that Peter Capaldi had been cast as the next Doctor.
Yeah.
You know, they'd had a major announcement, a countdown to the announcement, and I think most of that almost a year before this. So, significantly before this aired.
Okay.
So, there was a certain amount of, there's more coming, I know this.
Yeah.
You know, not that it rings false, it's just there's a certain, the art is conflicting with the business aspect.
Yes. Going back to the, I've been trying very hard to stay off of the internet with regards to Doctor Who,
mm-hmm.
while watching this, to try and let the story unfold as naturally as possible for me.
Yes. And again, like I said, I've been trying to adhere to that, except for the obvious things of, you know, you've been to enough conventions, you know.
Yes.
You.
I recognize character names and yeah. a few things like that because of it. And
there's a certain cultural what's the word I'm looking for? The property has so permeated the culture to a degree. There's certain parts you just can't not know.
Yeah.
It's like Superman. You know he's Clark Kent, Lois Lane, Jimmy Olsen. You recognize some of the character names. And maybe not the specifics about them, but who cares?
Yeah.
You know, with Doctor Who, the TARDIS, the Sonic Screwdriver, he's got different regenerations. Some of the actor names, some of the companion names and actresses' names and stuff like that. You just kind of know.
Yeah. Well, in this special one, the things I like was when they were talking about kind of all the things that had been done to bring him to this point. And River Song was mentioned,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was the, you know, they even kidnapped.
They raised a psychopath to kill you.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, been there. Married her. Loved her. Yeah,
totally married her. You know.
Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah.
Well, and I loved Clara's reaction to that.
Mm-hmm. There was also an aspect of the crack in the wall being his salvation and having been set up day one.
Yes.
Of his first episode.
Yeah.
So there's a certain, Moffat had a game plan for this doctor.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe it didn't go exactly as he thought. Maybe it meandered, whatever. He tweaked it as he went, as better ideas came and went. But having that kind of, this is how I'm getting in with this doctor, and this is his eventual end game,
well, I helps. I would say, I think a lot of really good writers know points A, Z, and M on their plot line.
Beginning, middle-ish, and end.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see, given how strong some of the season arcs were for the Smith Doctor, how that goes with Capaldi.
Yeah.
And if there is that sense of those A, M, and Z kind of points for the Capaldi Doctor, and how well that seems to go. Because we get Capaldi at the end. The regeneration, while it was really built up and started off strong, trickled into a little bit, you know, and then bam, kicks in, and suddenly he's... He goes from Smith to Capaldi literally almost in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
And so now we've got the new doctor. We've got the existing companion.
And the doctor doesn't know how to fly the TARDIS.
Yeah. He's very much maybe forgotten a few things because it's a jarring kind of transformation.
Yeah.
But this puts Clara in the very same position Rose was in.
Yes.
At the end of the first season, start of the second. And... this is really only the second time in the new Doctor Who we've gotten a companion at this point. Because when we got rid of Tennant, we also got rid of... he didn't have a steady companion. Mm-hmm. We picked up the pawns after that.
Yeah.
So watching how that transformation works, because while we've got Clara, she, again, has only had 9-10 episodes or so. I mean, about a year, but not a full season.
Well, and like I said, because they haven't been consistent with her reality between that half season.
Her status quo. Yeah. Her reality, I think, is, well, even that hasn't been consistent because of the different timelines and so forth. Okay, fair enough.
So I need to know better her home life status quo and what she thinks her normal non-doctor life is.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. They need to kind of stabilize that aspect as they establish and solidify whatever her relationship with the Capaldi doctor is going to be.
Yeah.
And establish the Capaldi doctor.
Yeah. I mean, I liked that in what we've had up till now, when she realized people were assuming that's her boyfriend, it's, well, if people aren't going to hassle me about having a boyfriend, if they make that assumption, I'm fine with that assumption. And then it's the, well, her parents weren't in on that, and they were giving her grief about, so she made up a pretend boyfriend. So she calls the doctor, and it's kind of the, you've already been pretending, so just keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of liked that aspect of their relationship of just, you know, she'll use him to make her life a little easier in that respect.
Well, and they very much mention that when she uses the TARDIS to cook the turkey.
Yes.
And the doctor's like, you can't keep doing this. And lists, you know, you didn't set a reservation for this, you didn't do that.
Yes.
And using him to take care of those issues.
You can't use my time travel machine to get restaurant reservations, this, that, and the other. Yes.
There's a certain, she's not above using it for her convenience.
Uh-huh.
But she doesn't seem opportunistic about it either.
No.
It's kind of a, this is a fair price in her mind to charge mm-hmm. for services rendered being the companion of the doctor.
Exactly. But it will be interesting to see how going from that relationship, what the relationship with the Capaldi doctor is.
Well, and again, how he is the same and or different from the other doctors. Because as we saw with Day of the Doctor, while there are definite differences between the David Tennant and Matt Smith doctors, there are very strong parallels as well.
Definitely. And they had, in the consistency line, they both had a nice level of eccentricity and energy that the War Doctor had kind of been ground down by the war and wasn't exhibiting.
Well, and I don't think Eccleston had kind of gotten it back yet.
Yeah.
You know, he never had quite the theatricalness, maybe, of those two. So it would be interesting for somebody to take some of the classic bits for a doctor. You know, meeting a companion, companion comes in, it's bigger on the inside, all of those sorts of things. And, I mean, this would make a fascinating set of YouTube videos. Do the same kind of mini episode with the same companion, but as each of the doctors. In other words, how does the doctor say, oh, let's go to the, do you want to travel with me?
Yeah.
How does he react to the, oh, it's bigger on the inside? How does he do one of the classic, you know, flourish of the sonic screwdriver? Or the speech of, I don't want to hurt you, but this planet's protected.
Yeah.
Those sorts of things. Do you have the apologetic David Tennant doctor? Yes. Do you have the swagger of the Matt Smith?
Yeah.
You know, how would they react to the same situation in something that is quintessential Doctor Who?
Mm-hmm.
But what are the spins they put on it?
Yeah.
I just think that would be fun. I don't know how it would play out. But it's the kind of thing you could, I think, feel if it's, it, no, that's, that just didn't get it. Or, yeah, that's that doctor's reaction to it.
Well, and how do each of the doctors pitch the, it's all of time and space?
Yes. How would you like to travel with me? What's their sales pitch for a companion?
Yeah. And I mean, in that respect, I would include the War Doctor trying to get Cass into the TARDIS.
That wasn't the War Doctor. That was the Eighth Doctor.
That was the Eighth Doctor. You're right. You're
but
right.
Had the War Doctor had a companion or had the opportunity to solicit one, how would he have gone about it?
Yeah.
So I think there's some fun to be had with that.
Yeah.
But you'd have to have somebody who really understands the franchise and the similarities and differences of all the doctors really well.
Yeah.
To do that. It'd be fun to watch. So I'm looking forward to what you think of the next series, what you think of Capaldi, how he compares to Smith, Tennant, Eccleston, McGann, and again, how the evolution of the Clara character goes.
Yeah, me too.
So I thought this was, again, a good ending for the Matt Smith run.
Mm-hmm.
I think the two half season kind of things, I don't say broke the momentum, but it certainly changed the cadence of the show.
Definitely. It didn't have that full season driving arc feel. And so it just left me feeling like it was a highly episodic season and a little confused of where's all the pull together theme? Where are all the threads I'm used mm-hmm. to following? Once I realized I should divide it into the Pawns half of the season and Clara's half of the season, I felt a little better about it. But
I don't recall off the top of my head if the Capaldi seasons had that kind of a break or not, but one season was in 2014, the other was in 2015, so there may have been a little bit of a break, but it's not like a here's five episodes, wait a year, almost, here's the other seven.
Yeah.
But it's... I'll be curious again what you think of... Does there seem to be that game plan?
Because
mm-hmm. that's the sort of thing that's often easy to see in hindsight.
Yeah.
And hard to see sort of in the moment. There are a few, again, the Impossible Astronaut, stuff like that, that it's like, wait, this is a big arc or whatever, even if there's a midpoint break.
Yeah.
But it seemed more pronounced with Smith than with Tennant. So do they use the change of doctors to change up the storytelling technique?
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see.
So definitely things I want you to kind of be thinking of in preparation for our next episode.
I'll try to think.
You're going to try to watch, too.
Yes, I will.
All right, so anything else on this?
I think you're good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.